And I feel like there's not enough movies now that are just entertaining, which I feel like is what movies should do. I like the movies that have other messages and things like that, obviously, that pull out our heartstrings and things like that. But sometimes I feel like a lot of movies are just, I want them to just be entertaining. And I want to go be, I want to not think about the outside world for the next 2 hours.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is Katie Kolica. Katie is from Utah, is a mother of five, and hosts her own podcast all about soccer called Kicking It with Katie. Her podcast interviews guests about their life in and around soccer, from players to coaches to parents supporting their children. Katie also loves the movies and enjoys films that are all about keeping you entertained from start to finish. Now, here's our interview with Katie. Well, hey, movie lovers, welcome to My Movie Story and welcome Katie to the podcast. How are you?
Good, doing great.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's good to see you again. And yeah, thanks for coming on to the show. And we've been chatting on and off for a while here about your movies. And yeah, I've been really looking forward to discussing these three movies with you. A couple of them really well-known, you know, Oscar-winning films. And something that a lot of our viewers may not have heard of, especially in Australia. It was new to me. And it was a film that you were involved with as well, which is cool. So we'll hear all about that. But yeah, to start off with, Katie, just tell us a little bit about yourself and what would you like to share with our listeners?
Hello, everyone. Hello, listener. My name is Katie Colliker. I am from Salt Lake City, Utah. So for those of you that are in Australia, I am currently, I think you guys are kind of in like a winter. Are you guys like in winter right now? Because we're in the
We sure are,
very
yeah.
brinks of summer.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're
Very cold here
definitely
right
on
now.
opposite sides of the world right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're definitely different.
For sure. Yeah.
But so I am, yeah, so from Salt Lake City, Utah, I am a mom of five. I have always been a movie buff. My parents, I remember when I was little, my parents always went to movies for date night. On Fridays or Saturday nights, I'd always go to the local theaters and see the latest shows. And I always loved kind of the glitz and glam of them, you know, waiting in line back in the day before there were, you know, reserve seating and everything, and trying to get their tickets for their whatever movie they wanted to go to, and having to get there early and wait in line and get in their seats and try and get the best seats. And I remember, you know, as I got older and I started going to theaters and seeing movies, and they started doing like midnight showings for big movies. And in high school, I went to, you know, all of the Lord of the Rings midnight showings, all the
Oh,
Harry Potter movie showings, and big film buff myself. I love movies, and it doesn't matter what kind, I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of a movie it is, I will try and see a lot of different films and different movies. So I have, you know, my DVD collection, our Vudu collections now, and always, like I said, always been a huge film buff myself. But it's more of like, you know, something that I connected with. I feel like I connected with my family on that level, as far as movies go. But again, I'm a person that I can throw out random quotes from movies, or you know,
Awesome.
pick up on different things like that. And
Great.
I've been told it's a different part of your memory that you use, that those types of things that are stored in my brain
Right.
from movies. And so that's one of my favorite things. But I'm also big into soccer and dance. I was a cheerleader growing up, a soccer player. I have my own soccer podcast that I host. But as far as, you know, things that I like, and I'm interested in, you know, you can find me at home watching a good cheesy Hallmark movie on the weekends, or if something's good out in the theater, I'll want to go out to the theater. So definitely big movie buff.
Well, you're in good company here, because most of our listeners are big movie buffs as well. And I think if we asked them, or even you, if it was between movies and TV and you had to choose, you'd probably say movies, right? But there's good TV shows out there for sure as well. And it was interesting hearing you talk about, when your parents used to go to the movies. And that's, there was a time before reserve seating where it was like you had to go and get in there to get the best seat, because you didn't want to be right down at the front. I remember that. And I remember also, because with my group of mates, when we would go and see a big movie, I would organize it. I'd call them up, and this was before social media and all that. You want to come to the movies? Great. I would drive around to their house, collect the cash, and go down to the cinema, buy the tickets. They'd print the tickets off, put them in an envelope, and I would hang on to them for like 2 weeks. And we'd book out the whole back row. And it was like an event, and now, and sometimes we just rock up to the cinema and not know what we were going to watch, because they would have all the showtimes up on the wall. We'd be like, oh, what are we going to watch today? It's so different now, though. You got to buy them online, you got to pick your seats. So it's a different experience. But yeah, it was just cool hearing about that, a bit for a bit of nostalgia. Yeah. And,
Yeah, and I can picture the theaters that we would wait in lines in with the ropes and, the snack bars and different things. And I mean, the theaters that we used to go to aren't in my area, no longer exist.
It's a shame.
There was another company that came in and built new ones, which are great. They have stadium seating and stuff like that. So, they brought the entertainment a lot better, IMAX and things like that. But the old theaters that we used to frequent, one of them, I'm trying to remember, one of them just barely closed down within the last few years. It was the last, I think, like discount movie theater in our local area that I could think of. I've been up into Boise, Idaho, and we've been a few times to like a $2 little movie theater place that we've gone to see some movies while we've been up there, that no assigned seating and things like that. And so we've frequented things like that just because it's an experience for our kids to experience, because the cinema and going to the movies isn't what it used to be.
No, it definitely isn't, and I think we're starting to see a lot of those smaller cinemas are closing, which is really sad. I think they struggled during COVID, and they're struggling to bounce back. And even now, like all these films that are being, tipped to do really well at the cinema are not making their money back. But then Inside Out 2, which has just opened at the time of this recording, did really, really well. So I think there's still, a place for the movies. It's just, it's not how it used to be. But yeah, hopefully they don't disappear altogether. That would be a very sad day. So
It would
we have to
be,
keep that
yes.
tradition alive, don't we? And tell us a bit about your podcast, Katie. You mentioned you got a soccer podcast. What's that called, and where could people find it?
Yeah, so I host, it's called Kick It With Katie. It's a soccer podcast where I
Nice.
interview people in the world of youth sports or youth soccer, and hearing about players' experiences going up through the youth system and where it took them in their soccer careers and lives, whether they played collegiately, professionally, if they've gone into coaching and different areas. I've interviewed just different places, or different people from different places as far as different realms. One of the women that I interviewed, she actually played professionally for a short term in Australia. I can't remember the name of the team off the top of my head, but she did go down and play professionally for an Australian team for a little while. She's over in Europe currently, playing professionally. But anyway, so that's kind of what my podcast is just hearing about people's experiences and life lessons and, roads to success and failures and all that kind of stuff. So.
Fantastic. Well, we'll share the links here in the show notes for anyone who wants to check out your podcast. Kick It With Katie sounds really interesting. And Yeah, and now we've got a few movies to talk about, so let's dive into that, shall we? So we've got three categories: all-time favorite film, the film that changed your, in your case, that changed your perspective on filmmaking. So there's a bit of a story there, and then the film that you think everyone should see. So I thought we'd start with your all-time favorite film, or maybe it's one of your all-time favorites. You know, it's hard to choose one. And this is
It is.
a classic film from the 90s, with two pretty big action stars in it. So yeah, please introduce this film for us, Katie. What movie are you going to talk about now?
So I'm going to talk about The Fugitive.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, listen up. We have a fugitive that's been on the run for 90 minutes. Average foot speed over uneven ground, barring injury, is 4 miles an hour. That will give you a radius of 6 miles. What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in this area. Your fugitive's name is Dr. Richard Kimball. Go get him.
I love a good action drama. Trying to figure out the ins and outs of where the stories are going to go. And that was one of my very first favorites and long-standing favorite. If it's on TV, even with commercials, I'll sit there and watch it. You
Everything
know,
else can
it's
wait.
one of those that, yeah, so it's one of those movies that I just love. I love the story behind it. I love the, action. I know it's old and outdated, but it's one of those that I just find comfort in watching as well, even though, it is an intense movie, but I love the story and premise behind it. It was, unique in its time and the story that they were able to tell and the different things, and I think one of the biggest things about what happened in that movie was it's one of those things where you kind of go, what if you were framed for a murder that you didn't commit, and what are the lengths that you would be willing to go to prove your innocence, type of a thing. And obviously now with technology and different things, like hopefully this doesn't happen as much as what happened here in this movie. But I loved that it was one of those that made you think also, like, and then there's always that joke, the one-armed man did it, type of a thing. And well,
That's right.
so that was, one of those things that people least, obviously that have seen it, or maybe not even have seen it, that, they say the one-armed man did it, type of
That's
a
right.
thing. And some people don't even know where it came from. And for
No, no.
me, this is where I correlate it. So I'm like, if it came from anywhere else, I don't know where, but this is where I correlate that phrase coming from is from The Fugitive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of worked its way into the common lexicon. Like when you it's obviously you, but you're trying to get out of it, it's just, you just say it was the one-armed man, and everyone's like, hey, who, what, hang on, what are you talking about? Because obviously in this film it was a one-armed man that killed his wife, but no one believed him, because it's like, how could a one-armed man do that, right? You know, so it made it look really obvious that he was the killer. Obviously he wasn't, but so just quickly for anyone who hasn't seen this film, because it is over 30 years old now, who's in The Fugitive, and what's it all about?
So the only two people that I can think of off the top of my head are Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford. So many people know Harrison Ford as Han Solo or Indiana Jones. Fan favorite. Love
Absolutely.
Harrison Ford. And then Tommy Lee Jones, love him as well. Men in Black and all of his action movies that he's
He's
been
great.
in as well. But those are like the two main guys throughout the film. There's a few other people that you may recognize from other works. But those are the two main headliners, as far
Two
as
big
characters
stars.
go. And yeah. And so Harrison Ford is the man who is being framed for killing his wife at the very beginning of the movie. And then Tommy Lee Jones is the marshal, the US Marshal, who is trying to hunt him down after he escapes from prison. Basically, he's on a transport train and no bus, and they collide with a train. I think
That's
that
right.
is what happens. And anyway, so it's basically them trying to apprehend him, and he's starting to get back into his life in Chicago to try to figure out what happened. What's her name? Weakest Link host. She is also in it, and it's so funny because she is so young. Jane Lynch,
Oh,
she's
that's
in it
right.
as well.
Yes, as one of the nurses, yeah.
And
Or
yeah, and so
doctors, yeah.
she's in it.
Yep, and a young Julianne Moore has a small part in it as well. Before she was famous, yeah,
Yes.
as one of the doctors, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting to go back and watch some of these older films that I've, grown up and loved and cultured, and then I go, oh my gosh, I haven't watched this forever. I totally forgot that that person was in that film.
That's
And so
right.
those are a couple of other bigger names that, came up more in the, maybe like Jane Lynch. I feel like she got very famous in the early 2000s, as far as like her comedic career and things like that. She was on Glee
Of course,
and
yeah.
some other shows, that she was a reoccurring role for other things. But anyway, so love those guys, love their acting careers, and some of those, they get those bit parts in these types of movies that help launch their careers. And so obviously you can see where Julianne Moore and Jane Lynch's careers have obviously gone. Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones were already, kind of household names at the time that
They
this movie
were.
came out. So they didn't really need the help, but
No, and it was such a great pairing having those two in the same film together because they're obviously both really big actors, very different acting styles, playing very different characters. And for a lot of the film, they don't really see each other much, like
Interact.
Tommy Lee Jones plays, US Marshal Sam Gerard, I think his name is. And his job is just to get the man who's on the run and get him back behind bars. He doesn't really care who they are or what they've done. And Harrison Ford's like, all right, I've got to try and outchase this, ruthless cop who's on my tail, but also figure out who killed my wife and why and get his life back, right? Because he was like this successful doctor and everything was great. And then his whole life was destroyed in one night, So there's two really opposing different kind of agendas that these guys have. And obviously Harrison Ford character, Dr. Kimball, is really smart, being a doctor, and he's always like one step ahead of the US Marshal. And but he's like relentless. He's not going to stop until he gets his man, and it's great. I guess it falls into the category of what we call the running man movies. And that I just realized that the director of this film, a guy called Andrew Davis was his name. Before The Fugitive, he directed Under Siege with Steven Seagal. And then he did The Fugitive. And then a few years after that, he did a film called Chain Reaction with Keanu Reeves, which is about a man who gets framed and goes on the run. And then he did a film with Arnie called Collateral Damage, where he plays a fireman whose wife and son are killed in a terrorist bombing. And he goes after the guys who did it. And all of those three films are kind of about these men trying to find the truth. They're on the run. They're running from cops, running from villains, running from bad guys. So yeah, like it's a kind of an unofficial trilogy, really, those three films. And it all started with The Fugitive. Obviously, The Fugitive is the best. And yeah, it's so many standout action scenes in this. Like, what comes to mind for you when you think of some of your favorite moments from this film? What would they be for you?
So the train wreck scene, like the very beginning of the film, just thinking about, especially because it is so old, and when I watch films that are older, and we'll talk about this in a little while, but thinking about how they had to do that and how many takes it would take, and intricacies that they had to do what they did as far as special effects. So like the train wreck scene, that one was one, was very intense moment
Yeah,
with the
incredible.
bus colliding with the train and things like that, and all the stuff that happened there. Obviously now they would use totally different technology to create a scene like that. Like this is one of those films that I'm like, I would love to see what they would do for a fugitive film, like specifically this one, and how they would do it and adapt it to modern times.
Yeah.
And then the scene where they're at the dam, where they're, I can't remember what it's called, but anyway, so they're, when he jumps and Harrison Ford jumps, and it's a little bit horny, because you can totally tell that it's not an actual person that's jumping, but it is still very intense. Like, especially like some of the first times that I ever saw that, like, obviously I didn't understand when I first saw it. As I got older, I was like able to see things and point things out, go, oh, this is probably how they film this scene. And seeing it for my first times, you know, as a teenager, and going, oh my gosh, how crazy is that, you know, and not, you know, thinking maybe it was a stunt double or whatever, and now knowing that it definitely wasn't, but
no, just
it's still
just
very intense moments.
Very intense. That's the thing, the action is so like thrilling, and it's really just Harrison Ford running from things, running away from people. You know, there's a train that's chasing him. Sam Gerard chases him into the drain. He's got the gun pointed on him. It's like, well, the only way out is to jump, right? And it's just one great chase after another. And yeah, I think it's a very, obviously it's a very character-driven film, where it's not like the action is believable. You know, he's just a doctor. He's not like an action hero. He's not a macho man. He's just this guy who's like all of a sudden running for his life and just figuring it out as he goes. And he trips over and he falls down, and the amount of times he almost gets caught is crazy, but he keeps slipping away. So it's, yeah, it's great. It's like one really great chase scene after another. Just on the, I guess, the characters, you know, so your thoughts on the characters of, you know, Dr. Richard Kimball and US Marshal Sam Gerard. Any thoughts on, you know, the characters and, you know, what's driving them and what makes them so, you know, so determined, I guess, because they've both got very sort of different agendas. Yeah. What, any thoughts on that?
I really like, I mean, Dr. Kimball obviously wants to find the truth, and he wants to figure out who actually killed his wife and what was the reason behind it. Like, why am I being framed and everything, which we obviously find out the whole thing at the end of the movie. When everything is, come out to light as to what was happening. And it seems like, you know, he was kind of I feel like the reason why he was set up was because he was onto the trail of what was going on.
Yep.
And they didn't want his interference to affect, you know, the drug that was coming out, which is, which, you know, is just kind of crazy, because my husband's dad worked for a drug company for many years. And so, he was a pharmaceutical rep. And so we always kind of joke about, you know, the different kinds of drugs and procedures that, that companies have to go through to get these drugs approved and different things. And so, obviously something like this wouldn't fly.
No, definitely not today.
As far as like, you know, the results being doctored and things like that, but it was just, you know, him wanting to find the truth and still, you know, come out on top and clear his name and, you know, figure out what was going on, which I feel like everybody can relate to if they get caught out for something that they obviously didn't do. They want to get to the, I mean, most people, maybe not all, but most people probably want to try and figure out, why was I accused of this? Why am I being, you know, getting in trouble for whatever it is? And I want to get to the bottom of it to figure out who actually did whatever it was that I was accused of, to prove my innocence. And, you know, that's something that everybody can relate to.
Yeah.
And, which again is one of those things where I think a lot of people can relate to this movie, as far as, you know, what if this were me and I was, you know, accused of this crime, and how would I go about it? And obviously this is very dramatized, which is why it's a great thriller movie.
Right. It is.
But I feel like most people can on some levels, you know, relate, which I feel like there's a lot of movies out there who that they obviously have that touchstone, and that's where they want to connect with their audience and make the person feel like they could be one of the characters in the film. And then Tommy Lee Jones being the marshal, obviously he's trying to do his job and just He seems like the go-getter guy that's just like, I'm the marshal and this is what I do and I'm really good at my job and there's no room for error type of a thing.
Yeah,
But
that's
I
right.
feel like he starts to understand that maybe something really is going on, which he obviously does, and that's why, certain things happen throughout the movie is because he starts to feel like, maybe he is kind of onto something and he does a little bit of his own kind of investigation
That's
throughout
right.
it and, suss some people's lies out and things like that. And so that's, he starts to kind of feel for Dr. Kimball, but he obviously can't come out and, say he's innocent because he's not the judge or the jury, but he's just got to do his job as the marshal and bring
That's
him in.
right.
So.
It's really good character development, because at the start, Marshall Gerard is he's a bit of an a-hole, like he rocks up on the scene and he's just like, you get me a coffee, you do this, right? He pushes his team around and he's like, he's even, when the scene in the dam just before Kimball's about to jump out, he says, I didn't kill my wife. He's like, I don't care. He's like, I'm just gonna cuff you up and take you in. And then when once, Dr. Kimball keeps eluding them, they're like, all right, well, how do we catch this guy? We need to figure out what he's looking for. And if we can find that, we'll find him and we'll find the truth. So yeah, he's at the start, you're not sure about his character, Gerard, but then he comes, like you said, he comes around, he starts to seek the truth and realizes he's innocent. He's still obviously got to apprehend Kimball until he can go back to court and get his name cleared. But yeah, it's such great character development. And he won the Oscar for that role as well, Tommy Lee Jones, which was really, really well deserved, I thought. So great film. Great film. Yeah. And just the last question on The Fugitive. Do you remember the first time you saw it, or like, how you discovered it? Was did you see it at the movies? Was it on video, cable? Can you recall?
I can't. I feel like I probably watched it at home on like DVD or VHS is what I can assume. I don't think I was old enough really to go see it in theaters. But even if we didn't go to the movie theaters, we had that Blockbuster video card ready to go rent all of the movies that we could. So I'm assuming that that's where it was. I think one of the most times I ever watched it was when I was on one of my maternity leaves. I think it kept playing on a loop on one of the channels that I was frequently watching. And so like for weeks on end, I would watch it a couple of times because it would just be on TV and I was just at home after having one of my kids. And so I, would be watching it at all hours, it didn't matter. And so my husband would make fun of me that I was obsessed with it. And I'm like, it's a good movie. It's one of
Oh,
those that you can just
a
keep
classic.
watching. And every time, even though you know what's going to happen, it's still really intense. You know,
Always,
when he's going into different places and he's almost getting caught, that type of thing, you're just going, kind of cringing and going, oh, he's about to be found out. And, or why is he in this house? Or, different types of things. And so
Very tense.
it was one of those that I can just watch a lot. So.
Yeah, it's just so thrilling and exciting and rewatchable. And Kimball as well is such a great character, and the things he does to find the truth, like he creates a fake ID and he pretends to be a janitor just so he can go and hack into a computer and dyes his hair and goes and talks to these criminals. It's great. It's really entertaining. And I just remember there's the sequel of sorts called US Marshals. Did you see that?
I did not know.
Ah, that's a good watch. So that focuses just on Sam Gerard and his team. And this time the fugitive is played by Wesley Snipes. And you're not sure if he's innocent or guilty. Like he's like a government operative. And then Robert Downey Jr. is also in it as a agent helping out the US Marshals. And you're also not really sure who he is. So there's a lot of intrigue and mystery with US Marshals, but that's good as well. It's focuses a bit more on Sam Gerard's character, obviously. So that's a good watch if you get the chance to check it out. But
There isn't there there is another movie, and I think Tommy Lee Jones just plays marshals really well. Double Jeopardy with
Oh yes. Ashley Judd. Ashley Judd.
Yes,
Yes.
Ashley Judd.
That's a good one.
I almost said Ashley Green, different person, but Ashley Judd.
Yep.
That one, another really good one.
Yep.
Very similar to this one, just kind of female lead, but that was another one that I really, really liked. But obviously, Tommy Lee Jones is kind of like a field marshal or a marshal in that one as well.
Yeah.
So definitely another good watch.
Definitely. That's a good chase movie. Yeah. With an interesting twist on, you know, being framed and everything. Yeah, for sure. Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, fantastic. Well, good chat about The Fugitive. We might jump to your next film now, Katie. And this is the one that changed your perspective on filmmaking for a pretty special reason. This was a film you were actually involved with. And it's a film I'd never heard of. So, you know, another new one for me and a new one for the podcast as well. So, yeah, please tell us, what is this film and yeah, your involvement in it and how did it change your perspective?
Yeah, so this movie is called Once I Was a Beehive.
If you're with us, you're family.
I needed you more than I thought I ever would. You came to me and did the best that you could. Close the door and bless your heart. You gave it everything.
Hoorah! Hoorah!
We call all the first year campers beehives.
Why don't they just call them bees?
I've been saying that for years.
So it was written by female writers, and it has a specific kind of, I want to say, like, religious meaning to people in the state of Utah, but around the world. It doesn't heavily focus on the actual religion, but it's just something that happens in the Latter-day Saint culture, or better known as Mormon culture for people, or LDS. It's talking about just a girls' camp that some of the young women of a certain age go to a girls' camp for usually a week or so. And it talks about some of the funny experiences that people have and bringing people together and family and importance of, you know, kind of just being together as a community, helping people through hard times and things like that. And the way that I got involved with it was I was kind of asked after I had worked on a small TV pilot locally. I was asked to be the production coordinator on this film, which is a huge role. And I have never done anything like this before or since. I loved what I did with the film and learning the ins and outs of even just, you know, this wasn't a high budget film, but just getting to have a glimpse into what really takes to put movies together really changed my perspective on movies altogether and how they're brought together and filmed. And, you know, now when I go see big blockbuster films and I think of, you know, this is what I did on this tiny film, I wonder what these people had to do on this mega movie type of a thing. And so I think about the movies in different perspectives. I still love and enjoy films the way that I used to, but now I feel like I think about them differently and connect with them on a different level. Having been a part of this film and still being friends with many of the people in the film community, I've done like stand-in work on some local films, been an extra a few times. I really love being on set. I wish I could do it more. It really, like I said, connected me with movies on a different level that I never, I didn't respect before. And especially having worked on such a low budget film and then thinking about all of these bodies of work that were even greater. But it's a great film that I think anybody could watch. It, like, my kids have seen it, my sons have seen it, so it's not just like a girl movie. One of my sons, after it came out and we had it on DVD, you know, he watched it a few times. We got to interact with a bear for a day, which was really cool. And so there were, you know, just different things that happened on the film and throughout the film that I to learn about the, you know, the film industry, especially being, so where we filmed it was opens a lot of it was up in a lot of canyon areas, and so especially back then, the even you know I don't even know how people would have dealt with this before there was cell phones, but we had an actress who had to miss a day, and so we had to try and find like a body double for her for the day. And so I was on the phone with all these different agencies. I found a spot that I randomly got cell phone service, and I was calling all these different agencies trying to find somebody. And I basically found this actress's twin. She's actually an up and coming actress. The girl that had to miss, it was her bridal shower. So she was getting married, and so she was missing this filming day to go to a bridal shower. Her name is Ash Santos, for anybody that maybe has seen her in anything recently, but she's kind of an up and coming actress right now.
Oh,
She's
cool.
from Utah. But anyway, so she had to miss that day, and so I had to find like basically a body double for her for the day. But
Interesting.
it really just, yeah, so it starts out with this girl who loses her mom or loses her dad. Like, no, she loses her mom or dad. It's she loses her dad, and her mom is getting remarried to this guy, and she is the wife is a Latter-day Saint, and so coming together of their different worlds and different things, and the girl ends up going to the daughter of Paris, that's the actress's name. She ends up going to girls' camp for the week while her mom is on her honeymoon after the wedding, and it's just some of the things people may not recognize. Some of them are like we jokingly say like stereotypical, like I don't know, Utah things or whatever, just teenage girl things. And there's the different characters of different people and what their different personalities are, and bringing these girls together and their leaders and the trials that they face while they're at camp, the different things. One of the girls has anxiety, and so she sneaks her dog into camp,
That's
which
right,
she's
yeah.
not supposed to have. And so the interaction with the bear comes in towards, the end, and kind of the moment where I guess you could say it's the most intense moment of the film, with the bear and what they have to do to try and not get attacked by a bear, basically. And because they're trying to find this dog, and they come upon the bear, and they were afraid that the bear ate the dog and all these different things. So
That's it, yeah.
it's a really good, it's just like a good heartfelt film that I think everybody can relate to on some level, especially if somebody's lost somebody, if families are, families look so differently now as far as, parents getting divorced or parents passing away from illness, and then people getting remarried or not. And so I feel like people can relate to different characters at different moments and feeling those trials, that the girls are going through. And so it's just kind of a fun film, and I was happy to be a part of it and being able to catch a glimpse of what it takes to make a film. And the goal of this specific film, like I said, it was two female writers, and then we had a mostly female crew, as far as like the directors and different things like that. We were trying to have a mostly female through as far as that type of stuff was going on. So it was very fun and entertaining to work on, and I made some really great friends through that, and I still keep
Awesome.
in touch with a lot of them, even though I personally don't go and work on films anymore, but I talk about it all the time, even though it's been like 10 years since I worked on the film. But it was a highlight for me. I really enjoyed it, and I really loved it, and it really made me appreciate films. And any type of productions, but film specifically.
Fantastic. And that's the thing, like I guess until you're involved in the production of a film, it's you really have no idea what's involved in making a film. It's a huge effort. Even a relatively small film is still a massive undertaking. And And with your role, you said you were the project coordinator. Was that the...
Yeah, the production coordinator.
Production, sorry. Mm-hmm. So one of your jobs, you said, was getting on the phone trying to find a body double for one of the actresses with limited reception. That must have been challenging. And what were some of the other things you did to work on the film? Was it all mostly on production, on set, or did you do a bit of pre or post-production as well?
I did mostly pre and production on set. So I had to get like permits for us to be able to film in certain areas.
Right.
And which obviously having to navigate through that, which I had never done before. Obviously, like I said, I was totally brand new at this. So I had people helping me, you know, and trying to point me in the right direction as far as where I should be looking to get these types of things. So that was one of the things. We went and scouted locations. And then after they scouted the locations, then I had to get the permits for those locations to be used. And then I had to help get the day-to-day schedule. So the, but basically just the daily, like the daily slides and what scenes we're going to be filming for that day.
Right.
And, you know, who's going to be on call and what time their call time is, and making sure that we have the, you know, trailers and everybody getting ready and things like that. So mine was a lot more paperwork and office work, which is fine. So that's kind of what I'm used to. I've worked a lot of different office jobs. And so that was pretty easy for me to do that as far as that stuff goes. And then they needed me to go purchase stuff or whatever, and I would go run some errands during the day if they needed me to not be on set and go find, you know, something that maybe they needed for that day or whatever. I mean, I really enjoyed, you know, watching the scenes that they had to film. There was one day with some special effects where we had the rain, the guy that made it rain for one of the scenes. So that was kind of a fun thing to be involved with and be able to see how they, you know, make that stuff work.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you've talked a little bit about the film as well. And I guess the message of the film, which I sort of really picked up on, was the, you know, the girl who loses her dad and has to go on this camp, you know, the second she realizes that this is a group of, you know, Mormons, she's very like defensive and doesn't feel like she fits in. And then she's chatting with one of the older ladies who's running the camp. I can't remember the trek. Can't remember her name, but she's like, it doesn't really matter, you know, what religion you follow. Like we're all God's children or something like that. You know, and I think that helps that girl realize that, you know, doesn't have to fit in. She's not being judged. You know, it's just different beliefs, different ideologies, but they're all there for like the same reason. And obviously there's a few, you know, clashes between the girls, a bit of competitiveness and rivalry and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But at the end, they all sort of work together and become really good friends. And yeah, it was a really, really nice message. And it was a nice movie. I got thinking I'll have to show it to my daughter at some point, who I think will like it as well. So I haven't had the chance to show it to her yet, but because she loves camping and the outdoors and all of that. So and being a film that was filmed on outdoors, obviously in the wild, I mean, there's a scene involving a bear. I'm guessing that was a trained animal and the bear keeper was there and all that stuff. But were there any other like challenges or mishaps on during production, you know, filming in that kind of area? Did anything sort of happen that halted production or any, you know, like any issues like that, that you can think of?
I'm trying to think because we were up in like areas that were frequented by campers. And so one of the spaces that we used, obviously we had it reserved for the entire time that we were filming there. But there was another space near us that we didn't have reserved. And so there would occasionally be, you know, cars or things that were coming into those spaces or camping. And so we would occasionally hear, you know, doors slamming that obviously weren't ours that were interrupting sound. And so we had to, you know, obviously wait for things like that. Don't think we really had any planes that went over by That area, I'm trying to remember if it was near there, but a few years later, there was actually a fire near where we filmed. But I can't remember if it was up where we actually filmed, if it went that high, that mountainside in the area that we filmed, it did, part of it did catch on fire, from lightning one year.
Oh
And
gosh, yeah.
but it was, several years after we had already filmed there, but nothing like that happened to us. We had, as far as I can remember, we had decent weather, when we were filming, and there was a scene that was filmed near, it was when they were filming the Indiana Jones type moment, with their little thing, and I think it was near like a waterfall, and that one was actually filmed very closely to a road. And so that one was a little bit more tricky, but due to the compact space, I wasn't down there while they were filming it. I was on home base or base camp. I was up at base camp when that was going on. So I wasn't actually down where they were filming that scene. I knew the location of it because we had scouted it, but I wasn't actually down there. But I'm assuming that it was probably difficult to film with all the outside noise and cars and different things like that.
All part of the filmmaking process, I guess. There's always going to be challenges because you got lots of different people in a very confined space sometimes, all doing different things. And I remember being I was an extra in an Australian film many, many years ago. And they told us all to turn our phones off. So there was about 100 extras. It was in a theater, and we were like the audience for this play. And then a phone went off. Like the whole theater was really quiet for this scene between the two main characters. And then you hear this phone ring, and it was actually one of the crew members. And he was like underneath the stage or something, and he turns it off. And then they film the scene. They yell cut, and he's like, "Oh God, I'm so sorry. I hope I'm not fired." And then we all just kind of like laughed in that. But yeah, it was interesting seeing how it all comes together behind the scenes. It's pretty cool. So would have been a great
And it's,
experience. Yeah.
yeah, I mean, and it's really interesting, for people that have never been on set and you don't think about the way that things are filmed, because you think of a film, oh, they just film it in chronological order. Well, no, they don't. They overlap who's supposed to be what character when. So that way, if somebody's only in so many scenes, they can get all of their scenes done with and different things. So it's really it was really interesting to learn all of the ins and outs of that type of stuff and figuring out scheduling and when people are supposed to be on set and who's supposed to be there on what day and why, and things like that. So that was something that I don't think I ever really thought about. But yeah, so like you'll see people when, especially now with social media, so much where, people might be like, oh, this person rapped, because, I didn't know what that meant until I started being on set. And so when somebody raps, that means that they've filmed their last scene as being part of that film production, even though the filming is still going on. But maybe they were there for 2 or 3 days and they filmed their scenes and then they were done. And so it's really interesting to see how that stuff plays out and the scheduling and the coordinating of that and making sure that people can get their, other jobs or lives or whatever it is that they just are able to keep going. But yeah, it was really interesting to see that. Or there was a scene, one of the last scenes that we filmed right before we wrapped. Oh my gosh, I just thought of the biggest thing that happened, but I will tell you that in just a second.
Oh,
But
okay,
one of the
great.
biggest or one of the last scenes that we filmed, we were in a warehouse and they were standing up on these anyway. But it was basically, it's supposed to look like they're laying down in whatever scene it is. So they were filming in a warehouse the last scenes, and well, the last scenes that we filmed, they weren't the last scenes of the film, but it was right before we wrapped. And I think that they were filming scenes where they were in, I think it was supposed to be like they were inside the teepees that the girls camp in. And so they were actually standing, they weren't actually laying down, they were standing against these planks and things that were
Oh,
made
right.
to look like they were laying down with sleeping bags, I believe.
Okay.
But that's where we wrapped filming, was in that warehouse, which was kind of fun. But it's always really interesting to see, like, when I see a scene where somebody's laying down and I'm like, are they actually laying down or are they standing up now? Like, I think about that. I'm like,
You're
oh, what,
looking
I
out
wonder
for
how
these
this is
things.
actually being filmed. Yeah. But one of the things that I remembered just barely was so there is an ark that is used. So like Noah's Ark. And so they have this big ark brought out, and what we filmed in the warehouse, some of it might have been them supposedly being on the ark too. I'm trying to remember. But anyway, one of the biggest things was ark, when we were transporting it one of the very first days, it fell off the trailer on the freeway that it was
Oh no.
driving on.
Oh God.
And so I have somewhere I have photos of, you know, if anybody saw the ark, I don't know if I actually saw it or because I wasn't with it when it was traveling, but I remember, you know, people talking about it and different things. So that was one of the things that happened. They had to patch it up. It did get a little bit of a hole in the
Oops.
side of it, but it, yeah, it wasn't too drastic. So they were still able to film with it and things like that. But that was, I think, probably the biggest problem that happened was when that fell on the
Yeah,
freeway,
and
and I totally
that's a
forgot.
pretty important item in the movie, isn't it? Like it really focuses on that arc, and yeah, so oh gosh, that would have been the director must have been like freaking out
So I
big
can't believe I forgot about that, but yeah,
time.
it was crazy. And I think I forget about it because I wasn't there when it happened. I just know that it happened and I have pictures of it. But I definitely remember that was one of the big things, and it's kind of funny. I think I made a post on like Facebook and I was like, did anybody see Noah's Ark on the side of the road? That's part of the production, you know, kind of used it a little bit to advertise the film that was going to be coming out. So it
Awesome. A
was
bit of
pretty
early
interesting.
buzz. A bit of early buzz. That's cool. Oh, what interesting. So many stories from the set. And what a great experience that must have been for you. And then to be able to then watch the film and, know that you were involved in parts of that coming together and, having that connection to it as well must be pretty special. So yeah, very cool. Very cool. So once I was a beehive, I'll share the link here under the video for anyone who wants to check that out. Because it can be a hard to find film. I had to do a bit of detective work, but I tracked it down. So we'll share the link here for anyone who wants to check that film out. And we've got one more film now to discuss, Katie. And we've been sort of saving this one for last because this is it's a pretty special film. And this is the film that you think everyone must see in their lifetime. And I completely agree with you. This is, one of those films that really, renews your passion for life, I think. And yeah, you're going to tell us now what that film's called and why should everybody see this movie?
Yeah, so this film, and I've loved it, and I know some people who don't like subtitle movies or don't speak the language of what this film was actually filmed in, or don't like dubbed things, but Life is Beautiful.
Wonderful. Two thumbs up, says Siskel and Ebert. A modern comic masterpiece, raved the Chicago Tribune. Written, directed by, and starring Italy's national treasure, Roberto Benigni. In the story that proves love, family, and imagination conquer all. Life is beautiful.
I love this movie. I love the overall message of this movie. And not knowing, like when I first saw it and didn't understand, I mean, I'm a pretty big, like, I love history and I love learning about historical events and learning about them and visiting locations and different things like that. So this movie was definitely one that I definitely cried probably more than once during this movie. I laughed, but it's just overall, it's a beautifully told movie, And I definitely think that everybody needs to see it at least once. Like I said, a lot of people maybe don't like subtitles, or they don't like dubbed movies where, they have somebody else speaking whatever language. How now, the movie's filmed in one language, and then you can take a pick of which language you want the movie to actually come out in, and words that you're listening to don't match the way that the actors' mouths are moving, because it's I actually prefer to watch it with subtitles, because I love being able to hear the original language that it's in.
Definitely. Yeah, it's much better
It's
experience. Yeah.
yeah I remember one of the first times that I saw it, thinking, this is so corny, this is so corny. As far as like the beginning of the movie, and
Sure.
I think I was a teenager when I first saw it. But then obviously watching the entire thing and understanding and learning the whole story behind it and what happened, was, obviously very heart-wrenching and beautiful as well, for the overall story of what happened, and the way that it was done and the awards that it won. I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, it was just beautiful, and it's a beautiful story, and I feel like it's something that people can go and watch and see and learn from it and grow from it, and again, relate to it, which is one of the things that I love about a lot of movies, is the messages that they try to get across and the way that people can relate to it. But obviously this one has a deeper message, being part of the Holocaust and everything that happened over in Europe. But it was a gut-wrenching ending, but the way that he just made life happy and beautiful and fun and light, and he wanted every day to be happy, even though it eventually got to be so bad, and what he wanted for his son to just be a beautiful day, and he wanted it to be fun, and he wanted it to just be, and what he had to do to try and shield him from what they were actually going through was amazing.
Incredible. Yeah, really incredible.
And it's like one of those things, like, oh, I really wish that this was somehow a true story, as far as trying to help a child through such a horrific time and in his life. Obviously it wasn't a true story, but it was still a beautifully told story.
And yeah, inspirational, really. Yeah, for sure. And it's such a clever story as well, because really it's kind of two stories in one. It's the story of Roberto Benigni's character, Guido, I think his name is, falling head over heels for this woman who is sort of committed to another man, but he's like, he's completely lovesick for her and follows her to the ends of the earth. Eventually, wins her over with all of his charm and goofiness and everything. And then it has that really nice transition where, they go into the greenhouse, to be together for the first time. And then you hear his voice and then you see his son run out. And it's like, oh, now they've got a family, and that's a really nice transition. And then they're living this, quiet, happy life. And then obviously World War II catches up with them. And, they're invaded and then put on the train and sent to the concentration camp. And then, like you said, it's about him protecting his son and all of that. So, I guess what, in your opinion, like what makes this film so unique, and why does everybody need to see this? I mean, there's a lot of films out there about the Holocaust, and we've covered a couple of them, but what makes this one stand out for you the most?
For me, I think it's just positive outlook on it and the overall message as far as happiness that is trying to be told in it. And that's one of the things that I absolutely loved and was drawn to, was just his willingness to keep and provide for his family whatever he needed to do, and also make sure that it was beautiful in the way that they could make it. I mean, obviously they struggled, and she didn't have the extremely glamorous life that she probably could have had had she married the other guy, but it was still beautiful in a different way and meaningful to her in a different way, and it was loving. And you know, he made one of the things that I used to joke about was the Principesa, Principesa, that he would always say, and I kind of thought it was corny, but as I got older and I was like, oh, you know, I love that. Like, he wanted her to know that, you know, she was special to him and that she mattered to him and that he was willing to, you know, do whatever he needed to do. And I think the different outlook that, I mean, it wasn't so focused on specifically on the Holocaust. Felt like that was more of a, you know, I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to say. As far as, you know, they didn't focus on what was going on in the concentration camp. They were trying to focus on turning this horrible, awful, horrible situation into a better situation, and how can he keep his family alive and do what he needed to do to keep them alive, you know, because he did certain things that kept them out of harm's way, obviously not for him in the very, very end. But the son was reunited with the mother,
which
was absolutely amazing.
Such a tearjerker.
At the very end, you know, when they're all, and so it pulls on your heartstrings. Obviously the whole situation behind the Holocaust, you know, you can feel for that. And, but this one specifically, as far as the family dynamic and the father trying to protect the son and keep the family together, but doing what he could to protect them, but still continue to play the games with the son to keep his mind occupied. Cause anybody that has kids, knowing that if you're playing a game or doing something fun, it distracts the kids from sometimes awful things that could be going on, or, you know, distracts them from just everyday life. But they, you know, they remember those happy times. And so this, to me, like when I think about it, you know, the kid is going to be remembering, well, I just played, you know, hide and seek with my dad, or you know, whatever it was. And this is what we were playing pretend this day. And so those were the types of things that I was just like, you know, the fact that he, in this character, he was wanting to do what he could to protect his son from evil that was happening and still make it positive. And obviously a lot of people wouldn't be, have the resilience to be able to do something like that.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, a film. And so that's obviously what he was supposed to do, but showing people that no matter what life throws at you, you can still somehow make a positive out of the worst situations. You know, they were in this terrible situation and he was still trying to make it happy and something beautiful come out of it. And in the end, it paid off because he was able to spare his son's life and his wife. So,
And that was his purpose. Like once they were taken into the concentration camp, obviously he knew exactly what was going on. And his sole focus was just his son, and he was willing to do absolutely whatever it took to protect his son's innocence and not let this experience traumatize his son, because obviously it would have been very traumatizing, you know, and just make him think it was all a game, you know. And there's a, we'll get to some of your favorite scenes in a minute, but the one that just popped into my head was the son and the father are in the, you know, the cabin with all the other guys. And then the soldier comes up and says, "Who speaks German?" And he puts his hand up. And one of the other guys is like, "Do you actually speak German?" He's like, "No." And he goes to be the like interpreter for the German soldier. And he's just making up this whole story that it's all a game. And the son's just like, "Oh, wow, this sounds awesome," you know, and just never mind, you know, giving the actual instructions to everyone else. He's just like, "No, my son's innocence comes first." And yeah, I think he was like, obviously, this character, Roberto Benigni's character, probably had a very similar childhood where it was like life was a game and life was this beautiful, joyful experience. And he wanted to raise his son in the same way. And being able to do that in the midst of the Holocaust was, you know, it's incredible. It's just, yeah, like you said, I don't know how many of us would be as resilient as he was to do that, but it just it like his actions are just really, inspiring, and it's just a very positive movie, isn't it?
He definitely executes that character very well, and he lets people relate to him, whether he's being funny, or what he's trying to portray. But it's definitely something that we can all relate to and aspire to in some ways. Obviously, we don't want to be super goofy and things like that all the time, but being able to still be lighthearted, because sometimes life can become, so drab and boring and melancholy and sad because of certain things. And so just remembering to be happy on a day-to-day basis, see the positives in some of the things that you might not see as being positives. And so that's, I think, something that's very important as far as, that aspect.
That's really the message of the film, isn't it? And like other great aspects of the film, I mean, it's beautifully made. It's really well made. The music is beautiful as well. And just the whole, experience that the film gives you is it's a really one of a kind kind of movie. And you've already mentioned quite a few scenes that you like. Is there any other particular scene in the film you like, whether it's in the first half or the second half, that really stands out for you?
Not particular scenes, but I do want to, and I feel like this is like a Wizard of Oz words thing. But as far as like the color in the film and how it's so bright and vibrant to accent certain things in the first part of the film, and then obviously towards the second part of the film, it gets to be very drab and gray, obviously, because of the situation that they're in. And then I feel like, there's a hint of color towards the end, when they're walking out and things like that. And so I felt like that was very symbolic as well, as far as those colors in the film, and things like that. So that's one of those things, because like I can picture the place where he's being the server and the restaurant that they're in, and the colors that are in that specific space and how that's going in there, and just some of the other colors that you see, and how that attributes to overall an extra element to it, as far as how it was filmed. And they did a really good job of putting that together. So I really, really enjoyed that.
Definitely. And it won a couple of Oscars, I think. Well, Roberto Benigni won Best Actor at the Oscars, and he famously, stood up on his chair and waved his arms around and gave this acceptance speech, and could, was still struggling to speak English, but it's very, very funny. And then I think it won Best Foreign Film as well. And it just raked up all the awards that year. And rightly so. It's a terrific movie. And just as we sort of now, get towards the end of our chat, Katie, just keen to see if you had any other honorable mentions of movies, being a movie buff, any other films you could recommend or that you like to talk about?
I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, and so like those are like my go-to films, or like Harry Potter. I feel like they're always on TV somewhere, and
That's right.
we'll turn them on any time of the year and feel like I can relate to anyone's movies. My husband said, he was like, "Oh, are you going to talk about Pride and Prejudice? Because I love Pride and Prejudice." And I go, "Well, which one?" That one, which was like a mini series, and then there's the Keira Knightley version that came out later, that we saw, and so I loved that one, loved those movies just because I love Pride and Prejudice. As far as I want to give like a comical one, and the only one that I can think of is Bridesmaids, mostly because
Hilarious.
that movie, I can say I was dying in the movie theaters when I saw that movie. I was keeled over laughing so hard, and I think my husband was embarrassed because he's like, "I don't know what's wrong with her." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I'm just dying. This movie is hilarious."
That's so funny,
So that was one that I really, really enjoyed, seeing in theaters. And went with friends and things like that. So
Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
yeah.
it is. It's really funny.
I,
One of the
oh
last really
man.
great comedies we've had in a long time, I think. Yeah.
And I feel like there's not enough movies now that are just entertaining, which I feel like is what movies should do. I like the movies that have other messages and things like that, obviously, that pull out our heartstrings and things like that. But sometimes I feel like a lot of movies are just, I want them to just be entertaining. And I want to go be, I want to not think about the outside world for the next 2 hours. And I just
That's
want to
it.
go be
Yeah.
sucked into this other universe, pulled out of my reality and put into another one, which is the whole purpose of these movies, is they want to put you in this other
Exactly.
space. They want to
Exactly.
put you in some other reality.
Yeah, well, this has been a great chat, Katie, hearing about your three films. It was really great to, revisit The Fugitive and Life is Beautiful, films that are just classic films, and hearing about your experience on Once I Was a Beehive. That was really interesting, and to hear how it's, changed the way that you look at movies. And yeah, I can only imagine being on a set like that would be the only way to do that. And yeah, it just gives you this appreciation for films. So, thank you for sharing your stories with us and coming on the podcast. And yeah, it's been great chatting to you. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. And yeah, thanks to the listeners. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yep, absolutely. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.